Welcome to Charlotte Readers Podcast, where authors give voice to their written words. This is the show where we meet Charlotte area authors and those who visit the Queen City, and we hear them read their work. This is Season 2, sponsored by Park Road Books, the oldest and only independent bookstore in Charlotte. I don't know about you, but I get a good feeling when I'm surrounded by a world of new books, and an even better feeling when I know I'm supporting the local independent bookstore. Consider stopping by Park Road Books for your feel-good experience. You'll meet a friendly staff ready to recommend that next great read, just for you. Speaking of feeling good, I've got a good feeling that you will enjoy our guest author today. So let's get to it. I'm your host, Landis Wade. Thank you for listening. In this episode, author J.D. Dupuy reads from Poetic Justice, Legal Humor in Verse. You guessed it, we poke a bit of fun at the legal profession, which is perfectly acceptable for J.D. and me to do since we're both lawyers. With a sly grin and a few belly laughs, J.D. waxes poetic about the stages of lawyer life, starting with law school and continuing through what he jokingly calls the final stage, disillusionment. Along the way, he rhymes about the brand new attorney, the courtroom, the deposition table, ethics, and law firm life. From haiku bursts of snark to rhymes that make nods to the famous poets, J.D. and his co-author M.L. Philpott find the funny in the law. And as a bonus, J.D. and I role-play some actual you-won't-believe-they-asked-these-questions in a real legal proceeding. And really, you won't believe the stupid questions these lawyers asked and the surprising answers given by the witnesses. J.D. starts by reading Time Warp about some of the nonsense that permeates law school.
Time Warp. Gossip. Insecurity, competition, cliques. Wasn't it a decade ago we outgrew all this? Sorting out the pecking order like teenagers do. Obsessed with rank, we watch our backs and watch each other, too. We've got all kinds of females here, from prom queens to wallflowers. Mean girls, dull ones, sporty types, and ones who don't take showers. The guys are represented, too, from quarterbacks to nerds, jerkwads, class clowns, and the ones in love with their own words. The romances are epic, and the breakups make the news. There's not a social situation we don't see as win or lose. Professors play supporting roles, engrossed in their subjects. We ridicule them, roll our eyes, LOL at them by text. Ambitions worn on every sleeve, there's much pontification. We're always preening for an audience, giving an oration. Why did I think there would be no nonsense of this kind? Clearly there's a lot we grown-up kids can't leave behind. They say, look left, and then look right. One of you won't make it. I think I may nominate myself. I'm not sure I can take it.
J.D. Dupuy is co-author with Mary Laura Philpott of Poetic Justice, Legal Humor in Verse, a collection that keeps lawyers and non-lawyers smirking, laughing, and saying, how true, from beginning to end. J.D. and his co-author say that this is not a book where you will find the answer to the question, what's the difference between a lawyer and a catfish? They also say this is not a book about laughing at lawyers, but about laughing with lawyers. They assume, of course, that lawyers have a sense of humor. The humor book is available online and in bookstores. And when J.D. is not thinking of how to poke fun at his own profession from the small law firm in Charlotte, he says he loves listening to music, catching up on reading classics that he missed out on in his youth, and fostering baby hippos. And if you believe even part of that, think twice before having J.D. write your obituary. Unless, of course, you like being the punchline. J.D., welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You made it.
I made it. I've arrived.
You made it out of law school.
I did, just barely.
You looked left, you looked right, and you got out of there.
So I think that's that little line is a throwback to, I believe it's from The Paper Chase, you know, that infamous scene where professor, I believe it's written in there, and the professor says, look left, look right, one of you is not going to be there, you know. And so that's a little wink to The Paper Chase.
And that movie is one that I think is early 70s, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's for many people listening may not even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
but that was the Harvard law professor who made going to law school look like going to prison.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah,
where you had to stand up and be heard.
That's right. That's right.
So how's law been?
So it's treated me well. I shouldn't complain, but I do anyway, as most lawyers do. But, you know, I guess I wouldn't have written this book if I hadn't gone to law school. So.
Well, at least you're a lawyer with a sense of humor. That counts, right?
There's a lot more of them than you would think, actually. But, yes, yeah, that's...
Yeah, I think lawyers get a bad rap for not having a sense of humor.
I think that's probably true. There's a lot of dry wit out there. You kind of have to have a sense of humor, I think, sometimes when you're dealing with some of the stuff we have to deal with.
But this book here, this collection of poetry, it wasn't just you that was the brainchild behind this.
No, that's correct. And I would be remiss not to mention right out of the gate my partner in crime, Mary Laura Philpott, who... Mary Laura and I knew each other at Davidson College and were friends and basically kind of reconnected on Facebook. And we realized very early, you know, a lot of people use Facebook for different things. We used it just for one-liners and funny tidbits. And we both found each other really funny and would play off each other comments and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know, one day we just were like, hey, man, we need to do something with it. Like, we have obviously a good rapport and same... sensibilities when it comes to humor.
And so what's her profession?
She is a writer, an actual writer.
So yeah, why didn't you make fun of writers instead of making fun of lawyers?
This is about the 10th project I threw up on the wall. And this one, she said, you know, that's interesting. And we'll get to some poems later on. But one of the things, my initial thought was, let's take famous poems and tweak them to do this deal where we're basically turning it into satirical humor about the profession of law. I don't know why, but I have great respect for her. And she said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And I was like, okay, well, if this one's going to stick, let's try it. So the two of us basically wrote this, in essence, over email, you know, wedging it in time between the full law practice for me and for her. She was doing her regular writing jobs and whatnot. And in any event, we would break up the tasks and come up with ideas, and we'd then get together and just go over everything and edit everything. She really was the brains behind the operation.
But you were the material.
I came up with a lot of the ideas. I mean,
you were the material.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. But yeah. she is an incredible editor and really pushed very hard to scrub these things. You know, I would think, oh, well, this is done. And about 10 more edits later, 10 more, you know, revisions later, I'd be like, okay, now I get it. This is done. So that's where her skill set came in just amazingly. So,
So tell us about the title. We're going to be laughing about lawyers the entire show here.
Right, right. So we went with, I don't know, maybe it's an obvious title, but the name of the book is Poetic Justice, Legal Humor in Verse.
And did you have any training in writing in verse before this?
I had none. None whatsoever. So this was a very interesting project to take on.
The ideas, did they just percolate up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I have a bit of a warped sense of humor anyway, and so sometimes I see things that maybe other people don't look at them the same way. I like to think that anyway. And so coming up with ideas really wasn't that difficult. The absurdities, the insane things you see in the practice of law, the personalities, and obviously there's some hyperbole built into these things, but... sometimes not so much hyperbole.
I mean,
built
do you think we should be telling people all these
secrets? Yeah, I feel like, I'll tell you one friend who I had read the book before we ever came to publish it. She's a lawyer, and I had her look over this, kind of several people look over them. And one of the things she said to me was, JD, I've thought this before, but I've never heard anybody say it out loud. And I thought, well, okay. I honestly, part of me was like, well, I guess I might get disbarred for this, but I don't know why or how, but oh well.
The other thing you've done is you've broken up, you and Mary Laura have broken up this book into different chapters of the lawyer's life.
Yeah, we decided it might flow better rather than just throwing it all into one big mix. We thought it might flow better if we kind of go through a graduated scale of starting young lawyer and really law school and then young lawyer and we have other chapters I think we'll get to.
Do you remember that far back, law school?
Just barely. I mean, it's been over 20 years, I think, or around 20 years for me. But, oh, yeah, how could you forget?
why is her bio so much longer than your bio?
Well, I like to say that she got her start with me and then went on to become a famous author, which she is. And actually, she was in Atlanta at the time we wrote this and now lives in Nashville. And she's, I don't know how much you've got in front of you, but she is basically the editor of Musing, which is an online magazine published by Parnassus Books, which is a very famous independent bookstore run by Ann Patchett and company. She's also a co-host of A Word on Words, which is an interview program with authors on the local PBS station. And so, you know, she's up there meeting. I think she interviewed Sally Field the other day for, her book that came out recently. So, and I'm stuck here with you. But you know, what in the world? I mean, come on.
What's the deal? On a podcast with Landis Wade. Come on.
So she's also coming out with her own book soon called I Miss You When I Blink, a series of essays. So yeah, I mean,
I think you've met the requirements of
making her famous, famous than she already is. Yeah. Okay. She's tremendous. She deserves everything she's getting. And
right,
more
who's this book for? Is it for lawyers? Is it for non-lawyers?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it for anyone?
The idea was we wrote this for, it's a gift book. Look, I mean, it's something that every lawyer will read and get a chuckle out of something in it. Hopefully all of it, but certainly something in it. And that's been the response I've gotten.
Yeah,
in
I think people who have never been to law school are going to have some fun with what you're going to read today.
Yeah, I think so too. And to some degree, it does sort of go across other professions and disciplines, but certainly paralegals and lawyers will get it. And, yeah, so that was the intended audience.
Okay, we're going to stay in the first phase here. I guess it's the law school phase, and you're going to read a couple of short ones here.
Yep.
A very short list and The Idealist. So take off.
All right, so this one's called A Very Short List. At a loss for what to do with my Bachelor of Arts, I figured law school was a good use as any for my smarts. Not that I love the thought of my whole life as an attorney, but at least I'd have 3 years to figure out my career journey. People said, why, you can do so much if you earn a JD. So I buckled down, invested my hard work, time, and money. Now here I am, ready to find that perfect opportunity. I've made a list of all the options, things I'm now prepared to be. A lawyer. The next one is called The Idealist. Everyone knew her in law school with her sandals and that long braid of hair, so intent on making a difference, righting wrongs, and making life fair. We ought not to have underestimated her, for while she ranted on the clubbing of seals, she studied hard and showed all the prepsters the summer associate spots she could steal. She picked a gig at a big DC firm where she'd have the government's ear. Funny, she seemed a bit muted upon her return for second year. By her last semester, she had traded most of her lofty concerns for new notions about tax code loopholes, having learned what a lobbyist earns. Last I heard, she was caught in a hotel with a senator striking a deal on behalf of an oil company whose last spill killed hundreds of thousands of seals.
So true, so true. Okay, yeah, starting with a very short list. I mean, this... I remember it like it was yesterday when I was trying to decide whether to go to law school, and my father said, well, you know, you can do anything.
That's right.
With a law degree.
I heard it a million times.
Just go.
Yep.
And today, it's harder to tell kids that, even though I do think it's true that, I mean, you're studying analytical skills, you're learning to write, you're learning to speak on your feet, and yet it costs so much more today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yesterday. So if you're going to go to law school today,
right,
you better be sure that you at least want to be a lawyer.
Yeah, right? That's right. at a minimum, that you better be prepared to do that because most people end up having to do that.
But then when you go there, your piece here on the idealist, law school kind of sucks the air out of your idealism, right?
It's funny to see how, you know, and I hate to put it that way, but a lot of people do become very jaded and you know, I guess the real world catches up a little bit. So that was definitely an homage to those types. And I saw it. I mean, I absolutely saw, obviously, again, a little hyperbole here, but in essence.
I mean, we grew up, me being a little older than you, probably watching Perry Mason, but you probably grew up watching L.A. Law and a couple of those.
Oh, I remember Perry Mason,
Yeah. And those period pieces where there's lots. Well, you know, Perry Mason was the criminal courtroom, but L.A. Law was all the civil stuff.
Sure.
That was hot stuff. let's go to law school. Let's save the world and do some stuff.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody goes and they think they're going to be before the Supreme Court doing constitutional law about whatever. And it's like, no, you're going to be doing traffic tickets for a Podunk County in Eastern North Carolina.
Or the first thing they give you to read is a case about a property dispute.
Right.
Something runs across somebody's field and it ends up in somebody else's field. What was it? Possession is 9/10 of the law.
That's right.
I think everybody has to read that first case in law school.
Exactly.
All right, now we're going to move to a phase of the practice of law that you've described as brand new attorney, sort of getting out there. You've been to law school. You're out in the real world. And you've done several little pieces here in haiku, right?
Correct.
Tell us about that.
Well, the haiku, the tradition. I've learned a lot about poetry when I wrote this too. Yeah. But the traditional haiku is 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables. So that's what we do with these.
Straight and to the point.
Yep. All right. So you want me to read a couple of these now?
Absolutely.
All right. The first one's called Measuring Time. Remember sun, moon, day, night, week, year. Now it's all 6-minute increments. The next one's called Employment Rates. Well-meaning friends ask, what type law will you practice? Any type that hires. The lawyer's spouse. That won't work on me. I'm not opposing counsel. Objection, my ass.
How true.
This one's called Cease and Desist. 50 paragraphs, 300 commas, therefores, just to say, stop it. So true.
Yep.
Conference call. This guy's a dumbass, I said after hitting mute. Oops, didn't hit mute.
And that's probably happened before. You know, the older lawyers, you can't work the technology. Yeah. You're pushing the wrong buttons.
Right,
and they're
right.
Okay, I've seen it.
Yeah.
So these are fun. You take just three lines.
Yep.
And you tell an entire story. I mean,
you do, yeah. And again, you know, this whole theme of this kind of chapter is a lot about sort of insecurities. Well, really, there's a lot of insecurities in this book. It probably speaks more to its author than anything else. but particularly when you're a brand new attorney. And so, you know, things like that, the conference call, the reply all emails, things like that that you just nerve out about as a young attorney. One false move and you've wrecked your whole career, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't teach you that you had to keep a timesheet in law school.
Right.
And
right.
You only can get things done in 6-minute increments, including trips to the bathroom.
They don't teach you anything about anything, you know, that's practical.
That's like, why
how
what
to
type,
run a business, you know.
That's like what type of law will you practice? Any type that hires.
Exactly.
But the lawyer's spouse, I mean, that one's, have you not gotten this at home?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, you're married, I'm married.
Yeah.
How many times have you launched into... No, wait a minute. Tell me exactly where you were.
Yeah, right.
When that happened.
Right. Yeah.
And my wife was like, "I'm not on the stand.
You don't
have the right to cross-examine."
No cross-examination. Well, that's I hope I'm not like that. I like to say I'm the least confrontational lawyer.
Of course, this is all hypothetical. I'm just
No, right. we're going to get her on next and cross-examine her and see what she has to say.
All right, so. We've talked about law school. We've talked about being a brand new lawyer.
Yep.
You've got...
There's one more there. This sort of falls in the same vein. I love this one, and I hope it translates to people that don't practice law.
You said it's a wink in Robert Frost.
A wink in Robert Frost direction. This is based off of a very famous Robert Frost poem everyone will probably recognize called The Road Not Taken. Wait, Road Less... Take it. I can't remember what the name of it is. That's how good I am at English. But this one is called The Call Not Taken. Oh, and let me say, when we first started writing these things, we tried to mimic exactly as the poet who inspired us wrote the poems. That's a very difficult thing to do. But if you go back and read Robert Frost's poem, the cadence and everything and a lot of the rhyming will be very similar. And that goes for a lot of these things that we've done where we've based them on other poems. We tried to do this for everyone, and I got through about 6 or 8, and I thought, this is impossible. That's why so we started writing our own. But anyway.
And just to set it up even further, you do real estate law as well, right?
Correct.
So,
yeah.
So this deals with what we talk about in law schools as meets and bounds descriptions. In the old days, you know, they had to go to the tree, then they had to go to the rock, and then they had to come back. And so you're dealing with plats and maps and whatever. And
if any of your listeners are still awake,
we'll be ready. So I should just stop and let
No. But it is about all of that, but it's also about anxiety, and that's really what it boils down to.
Okay, take it off.
The call not taken. Two lines diverged on a mylar plat, and to one call I could not commit. And being new here, sweating I sat, and wondered just how it could be that a single line could seemingly split. One line was an easement of some sort, but which was which? I was doomed to fail. The clock was ticking, time had grown short, and as my guts started to contort, I sat alone and chewed my thumbnail. Being young and scared, I dared not ask my cruel senior partner for his take, for fear of catching merciless flack or being the victim of a wisecrack when he realized I was a fake. So I chose the one that I thought right, with anxiety and doubts acute. Two lines diverged on a plat, and I called the one less traveled by, and that led to my malpractice suit.
Okay. Everybody who's listening knows that malpractice is when a lawyer does the wrong thing, and it's called negligence.
Yep.
We're kind of struggling along through here through the mm-hmm. real-life practice of law.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to throw some nursery rhymes at us.
Right. So we took an opportunity here. There's a lot of ethics rules that you learn about when you're in law school and afterwards that they just hammer home. So we took some of the largest themes about...
Now, why would they do that?
Yeah, I can't even imagine why they would think that a bunch of lawyers might need to be taught what's right from wrong. But alas, here we are. So, this just occurred to me. It really is, most of it to me anyway, second nature and simple as what you would teach a little child through a nursery rhyme. And yet, some people still seem to struggle with it. So, we decided, let's dumb this down a little bit for some of the folks out there to help them understand.
Okay.
So, we're going to read a couple of these. Confidentiality. Jack and Jill went out to lunch to talk about a case. Jack blabbed too loud in a close-sitting crowd and spilled secrets all over the place.
And that's not, in this day and time, it's very easy. People go out, they're talking about the cases they're working on right at the next table.
Yep.
It might be the counsel on the other side from out of state or something.
Right.
And they don't
right.
recognize them because they've got too many lawyers now.
I think that happened recently in the news with somebody talking about a case and a reporter was sitting right behind them. And bad idea.
Bad idea.
The next one is called competency. Hey, diddle diddle, you know just a little about criminal cases, of course. But don't try to defend your drunk driving friend if your specialty's tax or divorce.
And how often does that happen? I mean, people think, well, I'm a lawyer. I can just look that up and do that.
I think I have a partner who was a bar counselor. And so he would hear cases, I think that it happens fairly often. I think these types of things where people just step outside what their comfort zone is, for whatever reasons. And, there's something good to be said for that, but you better know what you're talking about or else you're going to be in big trouble.
A little bit of humor there, but not,
not
entirely.
Yeah. So, the next one is called drinking on the job. And I guess this is not so funny to some folks, but I mean, the fact is there are quite a few, alcoholism and practicing law are not mutually exclusive in a lot of times. So here's our warning about that.
And what you're about to read has actually happened. I've seen it happen in court. So it's not a far-fetched thing. On the serious side, although this will be humorous in one respect, I mean, lawyers are one of those professions that suffer more than most with drug dependency and alcohol abuse.
Agreed, 100%. And people have different outlets for their issues. Luckily, mine was writing a book and not going in either of those avenues.
I mean, I have a theory, and I've heard is that lawyers are always, looking at the worst case scenario.
Yep.
So they're always depressed.
I mean, I don't know why I find that so funny, but it's 100% true, I'd say.
All right, so drinking on the job.
Drinking on the job. Humpty Dumpty sat at a bar. Humpty Dumpty went five drinks too far. All the strong coffee and all the breath mints couldn't make afternoon hearings make sense.
Okay. That is a guy in court who's not making sense, which leads us into a section of your book called In Court.
Yes.
And your sort of lead-in is a world like no other. It has its own rules, the language is strange, and the characters are jewels.
Yeah, so we spend a lot of time writing about different types of lawyers, judges, scenarios you run into. Some of them are very sort of lawyer-specific. Again, some of them probably float across different different professions and things, but the whole point was to sort of get a glimpse of inside the court life and see what that's like. So if you'd like, I can read this one we wrote. And again, this is another one we based off of a very famous poem called The Raven. And ours is, in fact, called The Raven.
You think Edgar Allan Poe is going to be upset with you?
Yeah, he doesn't have anything to say about it now, so... Once upon a morning dreary, in a courtroom, feeling weary, I wondered which judge would emerge from behind the chamber door. Whilst I sat reviewing notes, the deputy, he cleared his throat. "All rise," he said. A figure appeared. Under my breath I swore. "Not again," I muttered quietly and looked down to the floor. 'Twas the judge I most abhorred. As his ebony wings around him flapped, he settled his robe in his lap. Pasted slick like greasy feathers, his thin black hair he wore. It would be enough, his dour pose, beady eyes, and beak-like nose, to earn him the nickname of the Raven, but in fact what he was known for was the way he shot down anything you ever asked for, his favorite phrase, "Nevermore." Despite the arguments I made, it seemed he could never be swayed. I would always come up short asking, "May it please the court?" When my client broke probation, hit a cop while on vacation, I asked the judge for grant of bail, fearing it was of no avail. I knew what he would say before he even heard what I hoped for. Quoth the Raven, "Nevermore." I once took on a soft drink maker for being a trademark taker. Seemed so obvious to me that this rule breaker was done for. If a drink called Mountain Spew came in a bottle of green hue, would infringement seem to you like the right answer in this war? But the judge drank nothing more. He was a spew fan to the core. Quoth the Raven, "Nevermore." Had a case ripe for dismissal and let out a victory whistle. Summary judgment was in order, to be sure. Though the case was clearly flimsy, it was subject to his whimsy. And I knew as soon as I saw opposing counsel take the floor, he'd have eyes for only her, such was her busty blonde allure. Quoth the Raven, "Nevermore." Then came my time to shine, and the stars they did align. I defend an easy one, the anchorman from Channel 4, who'd been caught in a misdeed, just a pocket full of weed. Got the DA to agree he'd plea for keeping jail time short. But his honor's mood was poor, and he killed my chance to score. Quoth the Raven, "Nevermore." So on that morning dreary, my mood, well, it was not cheery. And when I realized it was he, what I'd be in for, a sudden rage it blinded me, so fed up I could barely see. I grabbed my overstuffed briefcase, and without the least remorse, chucked it across the courtroom, toward the bench, and to the floor, as I screamed it, "Nevermore." Not quite as dark as Edgar Allan's, but, you get the point.
No, but, judges are people, too, and sometimes lawyers and some judges and some lawyers just don't get on together.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's true that sometimes you go, I believe it's true. Anyway, I don't do a whole lot of litigation, but sometimes you don't know which judge is going to be assigned to you until very close up until the time. And that was sort of the lead into this and maybe a critical point when you're reading this, you need to understand that you don't get to necessarily judge shop the way people think you do.
No, there's no judge shopping. I mean, they rotate judges in North Carolina, and mm-hmm. Superior Court judges spend 6 months in other counties and they come back home. And
right.
So, yeah, but the judges, for the most part, we have really, really good judges in North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And throughout the nation, of course, without some judges that aren't problematic, we wouldn't have good books.
I should probably state for the record, this isn't based on any specific judge.
Right.
Don't disbar me.
That's right. Well, John Gresham, he's written a lot of books about...
Who's that? I've never heard of him.
You never heard of that guy?
Nope.
Written some books about judges, and he wrote... I was looking at his little blurb on the Whistler, which was one he wrote. It says, "We expect our judges to be honest and wise. Their integrity and impartiality are the bedrock of the entire judicial system. We trust them to ensure fair trials, to protect the rights of all litigants. But sometimes, judges bend the law or take a bribe." And I, you know, and I thought of it. I was at a book signing with Gresham one time. Not me signing my book for him, obviously, but him signing his. Now, I knew you were confused by that.
I just assumed you meant you were both at tables at the same time
together. So I'm there. He's got one of his books at Park Road Books, by the way. And I asked him this question. I said, "Why do you write so many books that involve crooked lawyers and crooked judges?" He said, "Well, you know, for the most part, 98% of the lawyers and judges are really good people, but I'm trying to sell books." And that's true. You know, for it to be fun and interesting, you gotta add a little bit of that.
You and me both, buddy.
There you go. So let's talk a little bit more about the in-court situation with one you got called the Generalist.
So this is a special one to me, and it should be to you. It was in no small part inspired by none other than your father and other lawyers. And I should back up and say that Landis's dad and I practiced law together for many, many, many years, which is the only reason I'm sitting here today, I'm convinced. But in any event...
Your co-author wrote a good book.
I'm tired of hearing about her, Landis.
Yeah, move on.
In any event, Landis's father and some other older attorneys came from an era where they were specialists. They did a little bit of everything and knew they were generalists, and they did a little bit of everything. And over time, certainly as we've been practicing over the last 20, 30 years, things have gotten much more specialized, and now it's hard to find a lawyer who can do more than one or two things. But things were just not as complex back then. And so he was, in no small part, an inspiration for this next one. So this is called The Generalist. It was Monday morning, calendar call, when I first heard his voice, that thick southern drawl. He sat in the back, so I turned to see, in a room of dark suits, an old man in khaki. Not a day under 80, he looked quite well, like a spry kind of guy with a story to tell. I watched him that morning as he watched all of us, seeming vaguely amused at our young lawyer fuss. So I sought him out later when court was complete. Here was a character I wanted to meet. I told him a bit of my brief history and how I practice family law, specifically. When I asked him his specialty, he raised an eyebrow, and what he said next I can hear even now. "Son," he said wryly, "I'm a generalist." I stopped cold. "A what? Do they still exist? Could the same guy who handles a custody dispute turn around and take on a sentence to commute, and then later meet with an estate's clerk to file the final account paperwork?" "Yes," he said, "he could meet any client's need. He'll even search titles in the registry. He knows landlord-tenant, wills and trust too. It seems there is nothing he can't or won't do. He's practiced this way for 50-plus years, but sadly," he said, "he's the last of his peers. Many of them had grown dissatisfied when it became all the rage to be board certified. It's all so complex now," he said in frustration. "The profession was killed by specialization. The golden age of law," he felt, "had faded, leaving the legends like him rather jaded." Such a relic he was, this old-school law guy. I hated to shake his hand and say goodbye. Though I'd have loved to hear more of what he said, we both had a full day of work still ahead. I was unsure where next I'd see him or when, but I guessed his wide path might cross mine again. He faded from view as he drifted away in a crowd of not-so-special specialists that day.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
It's different. I mean, 35 years ago, which is when I started practicing law, you rotated through the firm. And firms weren't that big at that time. I'm talking about 15 other lawyers. And you learned how to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I did a will. I went to the courthouse. I did a landlord-tenant case. I did an employment case. And you know, it wasn't this like it is today. You come out of law school, and I want to be a corporate lawyer.
Yeah.
Right. Not only that,
yeah.
I want to be a corporate lawyer that specializes in one kind of little corporate
thing.
Right,
commercial loans or whatever. Yeah, And it's not necessarily worse. I don't mean to leave that impression, but it's definitely different. And I do think the professional aspect of practicing law has changed a good deal as a result. In other words, when you'd see all your fellow lawyers down to the courthouse periodically, you know, there's a cordiality about it. Right. And that is, most lawyers, specifically in the Mecklenburg County Bar that I've dealt with, are pretty good. But I think by and large, it is some of that is gone, some of that cordiality and familiarity, because, you know, you're just in your different little silos.
Yeah, a lot's changed since we started practicing, including, you know, I think a little bit the time that lawyers take off during the day from what they're doing just to get together with another lawyer in the firm. Now, you're in a smaller firm. I'm in a bigger firm. Right. But with the pressure to bill hours and everything, people want to eat at their desk or they want to bring their lunch. It used to be everybody would shut down at 11:45 and you'd go down to nobody remember this, Jake's on Tryon Street.
Yeah.
You get a meat and two vegetables.
That's it.
And you'd talk about something other than law for the next hour.
That's right. Yeah. And that's the culture, fortunately, I was brought up in and that we continue to practice in my firm. We all, if we're around, we all go out to lunch together about every day. And just that's like great. You say, take 30 minutes or an hour and just think about something else.
All right, so now we're going to move into something that's fun. It's Tales from the Table, and by table, tell us what table we're talking about.
Right, so this is Tales from a Deposition Table. I mean, and Landis is an actual litigator. He probably knows a lot more about this than I do, but the idea behind this is you wouldn't even believe the stories that are told and the tales that are tell in the process of deposing a witness, you know, trying to get their sworn statements about the facts about a particular case. And the things you learn about situations and people, there's a wide variety of people out there. Let me put it that way. And
And this particular one, this person is reflecting on what he saw today in the deposition.
Right. So this one's called "I Wish I Could Unsee the Things I Saw Today." Today I deposed a CEO of a tech company, a guy no older than 50, who can't possibly claim not to understand how the internet works, but who still used his work email address to register for site after site, filled with images of individuals who don't look like they're really enjoying the things they're doing, with props such as spatulas and oven mitts. And although the username on the accounts, the Sperminator, looked an awful lot like the nickname on his embroidered golf towels, the Herminator, he claimed to have no clue what we were showing him, even as the blood drained right out of his face.
Recently, I had a chance to catch up with Robert Ingalls, who's a lawyer that's now making a business helping other lawyers put on podcasts. So if you're one of my lawyer friends and you got an idea to do a podcast, listen carefully.
So we have what we are calling our white glove package, where we go to law firms and we bring in all of the recording devices, we set up everything, and we bring them in and explain a little bit about how to make sure that they're using the microphones and everything correctly.
So let me get this straight. If I know what I want to say and I've got my notes and I'm going to talk about family law or criminal law or employment law or whatever, I prepare the message and you show up to my office and you make the technical part of it easy?
Absolutely. We're going to set everything up. We're going to record for you. And then we're going to pack everything up and leave. And you're never going to have to touch that again. Now, we're going to let you listen to it before it goes out.
And you're going to make me a famous podcast lawyer after that? Or
results may vary, but yes.
You sound like a lawyer there talking.
I don't know why that is.
All right. The dials on my digital recorder are flashing that we've got too many lawyers on the show at the moment. So we're going to drop off from Robert here and reduce the count of lawyers to 2 instead of 3. All right, so what we got here, humor and depositions, and I basically went to the place where all knowledge can be found, the internet, and pulled this from the Electric Law Library and from the other one here. It's the cross-examination blog, but they took it from official court records, so I'm fine to read it here.
These are
this is what actually reported up in cases. So I'm going to start here. I'm going to be the lawyer who's asking the questions at the deposition. I show you Exhibit 3 and ask you if you recognize that picture.
That's me.
Were you present when that picture was taken? Now, Mrs. Johnson, how was your first marriage terminated?
By death.
And by whose death was it terminated?
Oh, man.
Do you know how far pregnant you are now?
I'll be 3 months on November 8th.
Apparently then the date of conception was August 8th.
Yes.
Well, what were you doing at that time? It's hard to believe that these are in real
actual questions and answers.
Okay, here's a good one right here. You say that the stairs went down to the basement.
Yes.
And these stairs, did they go up also?
And here's the thing. I early on did some depositions, and I could totally see myself doing this just because, you're trying to think of the next thing
nervous.
To say.
You're
yeah, nervous. Yeah.
Next question.
Yeah. Oh,
it's kind of like a podcast.
It's really not fair to read these in isolation later. Yeah, but
podcast host too.
Right.
Do you recall approximately the time that you examined the body of Mr. Eddington at the Rose Chapel?
It was in the evening. The autopsy started about 8:30 p.m.
And Mr. Eddington, he was dead at the time. Is that correct?
No, you stupid. He was sitting on the table wondering why I was doing an autopsy.
Okay. Now, let me see here. Here we go. The accused. He's defending his own case. And he's cross-examining, the main witness. I don't even think you have a part to play here, J.D., because I'm just going to read it.
Oh, okay.
Did you get a good look at my face when I took your purse? The defendant was then found guilty and sentenced to 10 years in jail. All right, the lawyer. What is your date of birth?
July 15th.
What year?
Every year.
All right, the lawyer says, can you tell us what was stolen from your house?
There was a rifle that belonged to my father that was stolen from the hall closet.
And can you identify the rifle?
Yes, there was something written on the side of it.
Oh, and what did the writing say?
Winchester.
Okay. What? It's kind of hard to read these. What gear were you in at the moment of the impact?
Gucci sweats and Reeboks.
Oh, man, this is silly.
Oh, man.
This is real stuff, though. Okay, all right. Lawyer, can you describe what the person who attacked you looked like?
No, he was wearing a mask.
And what was he wearing under the mask?
His face. Okay. Do you like how I've added the inflection?
Yeah, that's good. What was the first thing your husband said to you when he woke that morning?
He said, "Where am I, Kathy?" Oh,
and why did that upset you?
Well, my name is Susan.
Lawyer, did you blow your horn or anything?
After the accident?
No, before the accident.
Sure, I played for 10 years. I even went to school for it.
Okay. This next one, if you're ever out, and you shouldn't be drinking and driving, but if you ever were, you shouldn't answer the questions like this particular driver did. The trooper says, the lawyer's asking the questions to the trooper, and he says, "Trooper, when you stopped the defendant, were your red and blue lights flashing?"
Yes.
And did the defendant say anything when she got out of her car?
Yes, sir.
Or what'd she say?
What disco am I at?
All right, this is the last one, and this kind of ties into an earlier one, possibly. Yeah. Doctor, before you performed the autopsy, did you check for a pulse?
No.
Did you check for blood pressure?
No.
Did you check for breathing?
Nope.
So then is it possible the patient was alive when you began the autopsy?
No.
Well, how can you be so sure, doctor?
Because his brain was sitting on my desk in a jar.
But could the patient have still been alive nevertheless?
Yes, it is possible that he could have been alive and practicing law somewhere.
Okay.
Those are great.
All right, so we're going to jump back into...
yeah, you can see why it was so easy to get inspiration for some of these things.
Exactly. We're moving from the table to life in the firm with some more haiku. These will go pretty quickly here.
Yep.
So we're going to start with, what do you got there, reunion?
This is called reunion. Remember that bitch from first semester contracts? Yes, we've two kids now. This one's called misunderstood. We fight for justice, long nights, fluorescent lights. Still, we're the butt of jokes.
Lawyers in love, they get married in law school. Lawyers meet, they get married afterwards.
Yep.
And that's not an unusual thing, although we had lawyers come to law school, marry, and leave divorced.
Not so much. Right. No, it happens. Yeah, there are definitely a lot of lawyer couples. I don't know how they do it.
but the misunderstood, fighting for justice, long nights, still were the butt of jokes. Lawyers are always the butt of jokes.
That is true.
And Shakespeare kill all the lawyers, right?
And we did say in this, let me see, I think it's actually on the back of the book, we say, explicitly, this is not a book of lawyer jokes. Looking for the punchline to what's the difference between a lawyer and a catfish, you won't find it here. And then we go on to talk about what this book is about. And it's about, you know, sort of an inside glimpse, a wink and a nod to a fellow lawyer, you know, hey, you'll get this. You'll understand the personalities, the insecurities, everything that goes with the stories that go with this thing. And that's, you know, yeah, I guess part of me was also motivated by, yeah, it's one thing to tell lawyer jokes. That's all well and good. But this is something else.
Yeah, but it's great because for lawyers who can laugh at themselves and who do have a sense of humor, you know, when somebody really needs a lawyer, they're not laughing at lawyers anymore.
No, absolutely not.
And lawyers do a lot of good things. They're on nonprofit boards. They're out there serving in all kinds of capacities. Yeah. It's the ones that bend the rules that get the most attention, like anything else.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. No. There's we don't need to go through all that. But, I mean, it's not hard to find a lawyer you respect in the community and many of them for all that they do.
All right. We got Ode to the Rainmaker.
So, yes, this is, I believe, is this on Life in the Firm? So this is a little story about what they call the Rainmaker, the guy that brings in all the business. And this is based on an Elizabeth Barrett Browning poem that you'd probably recognize. It's called Ode to the Rainmaker. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. You reek of charm, the genetically blessed, and while I spend my hours in this office, you're on some golf course or other most days. Your intellect is at best rather base. Your work product is far below the rest. Your attitude is, I couldn't care less. When I clean up your mess, you get the praise. Family connections and a silver spoon, like a nephew in the mob, you're plugged in. What's to love then? It's simple. Selfish, too. I like having a job, money to spend, and as little true law work as you do, you've the golden touch at bringing it in.
I mean, some people just have the gift. They come out of law school, they can't write a brief.
Yep.
They can't, you know, search a title, and yet they can bring in clients.
They're salesmen. Yeah. I mean, they're selling their firm. And immediately.
And they're good at knowing. They're good at spotting issues. They're good at.
Yeah. And they're great at connections, and they got good personalities, and they can absolutely connect you with the best person in their firm that will do the job
that you
need.
And the rest of us have to bill in 6-minute increments.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay, let's hear another one. This is a pro boner.
So this one is based on a true story. Actually, a friend of mine did some pro bono work, which means basically doing law work for free.
Another way that lawyers do good in the world.
Do good in the world. And so this is based on a true story of a friend of mine practicing down in Charleston. And, the poem tells the story. Pro boner. I was trying to find some purpose, something to fill my soul. I needed to grasp onto some meaning to make myself feel whole. Do some pro bonos, someone told me. Help out your fellow man. I thought, of course, that's the spirit. I set out, full of pep, on a plan. I approached our managing partner and made my intentions known. He nodded, said, I've got just the thing, with a smirk behind his tone. What honorable service awaited, helping the old or the poor, advising a righteous nonprofit? My excitement grew even more. And that's when I learned the specifics, the story of a local inmate caught fondling his privates repeatedly by a prison guard who grew irate. The prisoner was forced to wear red so everyone else would see. He couldn't keep his hands off himself, a mark of shame for the detainee. And so it seemed I'd fill my void, making his humiliation cease. My noble charge, to see that this man could masturbate in peace.
All right, so we're going to play something real quick before we finish up that I'm calling First Draft. We didn't do it in season one, but we're doing it in season two. Short exercise to kind of get to know you a little bit better as a writer. I'm going to give you two choices. You can pick one or the other or both or neither.
Okay.
And tell me why, okay?
All right.
And it's First Draft because basically first drafts are crap, right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And you put it down.
Right.
And the train's coming through.
Yeah.
That's typical for an episode. Yeah. By the way, we're close to a train track. Okay. Are you ready?
Ready.
Ink pen or keyboard?
Keyboard.
Poetry or prose?
Poetry, obviously.
Yeah. Fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction.
Fiction? All this is fiction? We're just, yeah.
I when I read, anyway, I lean toward fiction these days.
But writing, you're...
Well, that's a little bit of both. A little bit of both. That's a hybrid. It's a hybrid.
All right. Morning or night?
Used to be night, now morning for sure.
So you write more in the morning?
I don't write hardly at all anymore, but that my brain seems to be working better now in the mornings than it did at night. Yeah. If I were to find time, it would be in the morning.
Outline or free flow?
Oh, I think free flow.
Writing or editing?
Writing.
Library or Google?
I'm a little afraid to answer that question, but I'm going to go with Google.
All right. Dictionary or spell check?
Oh, I like the old dictionary. I like to hold that thing in my hands and look at it. Yeah.
Introvert or extrovert? You're not an introvert, JD.
I don't think so.
E-reader or paper book?
I love the paper books. I have yet to get into the e-reader.
Social media or personal appearances?
Both.
Yeah, you like them both?
Yeah.
Marketing or manual labor?
That's a quick one. I actually enjoy manual labor because it lets me think about something other than practicing law.
Most, and we got a, I haven't got the tally yet, but it seems like most authors are moving toward manual labor, even though they don't like to do it.
Yeah.
They just like to do it a whole lot more than they like to market.
Right.
Okay. All right, so we've gone through all the stages of lawyer life, and we're finishing up with the end of the book. And unfortunately, you're not ending on a positive note. You've got this called disillusionment, right?
Disillusionment. And I mean, I think that I don't know why we stuck it here, but we did. And it's basically some limericks that kind of encapsulate the feeling that a lot of lawyers have. You know, you come into law school and you think, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to, you know, wear a fancy suit and drive a fancy car and, you know, save the world and do all that. Yeah. And you learn very early on things don't quite work out the way you thought. So this deals with that aspect. So the first one is called partnership track. I was promised the partnership track. I've stayed loyal and on the right tack. But the partners keep meeting despite all my pleading and moving the finish line back.
And that's true. That, you know, when I came out and about 5 years, you might be up for partner. Now it could be 7 years, 8 years, 9 years. Yeah. Do you have kids yet? Do you have grandkids yet? Maybe you'll make partner after your great-grandfather.
Maybe never. I think they come up with something called like special counsel or something where they, you know, just put people on
I think they've got 8 different names now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like giving someone a title and not a raise.
Vice president. All right. So the next one's called going in-house.
And this is the last, right?
This is the last.
Drum roll.
Go out with a bang. I left my big law firm with glee, but there's one thing I didn't foresee. Though the clients I'd had might have driven me mad, they were better than corporate VPs.
So that's the grass is not always greener.
Exactly.
Right? So it really used to be that if you got tired of filling out a timesheet and you got tired of, quote, marketing and all those kind of things, you take a job in-house and you become a corporate lawyer. But they work as hard or harder than outside lawyers.
That's right.
You know? And they have to answer
VPs.
They got to answer to somebody that considers themselves to be above their station. Right?
Usually the guy that tried to get to law school and didn't, but somehow, you know, is over them and thinks themselves a lawyer. And so, you know.
In a company, a lawyer is overhead. You know,
right.
They're not bringing money into the to the place.
Yeah.
And so, okay. Well, JD, this has been great. It's been a lot of fun laughing along.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Tell us where you can get this book.
So, you can order one online. I could certainly recommend that you go to Parnassus Books in Nashville, Tennessee, and pick one up there, or also order one from their website. Would be a good place to get it.
Yeah, I'm sure Park Road Books probably can get it.
I think any independent bookstore. Yeah. We like to send people to those places.
Yeah.
And ask around. They'll figure out a way to get their hands on it.
And Parnassus, that's where your... I didn't pronounce
Parnassus,
that right.
Yeah, Parnassus.
But that's where your co-author works, right?
That's where my co-author, once more for the record, Mary Laura Philpott, works as the content editor for their website. A lot of great interviews with authors and things like that on that website.
Yeah, and you say this book is not about laughing at lawyers. It's about laughing with them.
That's the idea.
For everyone who's in on the joke.
That's exactly right. We got a lot of good feedback. A lot of good feedback on it.
That's good. All right. Well, JD, thanks so much for coming in today. And this is great. I hope that we've cheered up some listeners today with our humor. And maybe they won't think the same of lawyers.
Again. Hope so. All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Well, that's it for today. another fine author giving voice to their written words. If you liked our show, we'd very much appreciate your help in spreading the word. You can do that by telling your friends, or by leaving a review on iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, or by connecting with us on social media. Our social media links are at our website, charlottereaderspodcast.com. If you sign up for our email list at our website, you'll get a free ebook, a novel written by your host. And by the way, if you do sign up for our email list, we promise not to spam you, just send you periodic updates about the show. Next week, we'll have another interesting author read and talk about their work. I hope you will join us. Until then, I'm Landis Wade for Charlotte Readers Podcast.